First off, why don't you tell me a little bit about where and when you were born and your parents' background?
Well, I was born in a small village. In Yiddish, it's known as a shtetl, a small community of several hundred families in the Ukraine, which borders on Poland. And that would mean that we had soldiers coming and going during the period of the war, the First World War, in and out while I was a child, and we were the victims of armies moving in and out until 1917, when the revolution was made. The Reds came in, and they also recruited people from our own community, and things kind of quieted down. But then they were driven out by the Germans and the Poles, and so we were victims of continuous pogroms and confiscation of your personal things and ransacking of your homes and pogroms that you could escape if you knew how to hide yourself or if you could run off to a Christian home. And we had many Christian Gentile friends who were very much responsible for saving the lives of our entire family. We got out of the Ukraine, not all together. That is, first my parents left, and then my older sister and brother left, and then I and another sister and a brother left. I was the youngest. And there was a good amount of desperation in the whole situation. Yes, of course. I was born in 1909. Mm-hmm. That makes me 69 now. And I was a kid when all this happened, because we left like in 1920. So I was, what, 11, 12, something mm-hmm. like that. But then we were 2 years in transit, and when we came to Poland was our first stop. We had to find the rest of the family. They were scattered. We found them. Then finally our relatives in the United States sent us money and tickets for coming into this country. And we began to travel, and we got stuck in Germany, and they wouldn't allow my father to come in because the papers had some irregularity. So consequently, we had to leave and leave my father behind after a couple of years of this dreadful experience of trying to get out of...
What did your parents do for a living when you were in the Ukraine?
When we were in the Ukraine, my father was a merchant of leather. He would pick up leather and sell it to the peasants who made shoes and boots and so on. But because my father was known as an exceptionally good man, in fact, they gave him the name Dobry Żyd. Żyd is, of course, a derogatory term for Jew. But because he was so good, they called him the Good Żyd, the Dobry Żyd. And we were borderline poverty people because my father would not make a profit on the, he would just sell for what he could sell so as to make a very meager living. That was generally the condition of the Jewish people. Nobody got rich in these small villages and small towns. And people lived in a very primitive sort of way. My father built his own house with his own hands, so he forgot to put windows in. And we would sleep, the whole family, in a windowless bedroom, if you can call it that. And generally, the...
Could you describe the house a little more?
Well, you must bear in mind that I was 10 or 11 when I left.
Mm-hmm.
And... yeah, I have certain memories, but they tend to fade a little.
How many do you have?
Yes, when you enter that house, the strange thing is I remember the number of the street and the name. It was 5 Hlebnaya Ulitsa, 5 Bread Street. And because ours was a better home, I think of the clay and brick. And my father was a very creative man. Whatever he did was done well. So our house was a little bit better than the other homes. And when we were driven out and left, and finally got to America, to digress for a minute before I describe the home, we communicated with the Soviet embassy and willed our home to be for a state clinic or whatever they wished. We never put claim of ownership on the home after we were able to connect with an embassy. So as you entered our home, there was what you would call the front porch light, an enclosed porch. And it was primarily for purpose of keeping the merchandise there and for people, peasants, to come in and kind of shake the mud and dirt off their boots, you know. And then there was a kitchen, and frankly, I must say that I don't have much more of a remembrance except that the back of the house was where the Johnny was. And since there was no running water, and we had to get the water either by going to the river ourselves and bring it, or there was a water man who would bring water around in big barrels and we would transfer it.
What river were you
in? We were very close to, I don't even know, a small community lake, I guess it was a lake. We had a huge forest and about a mile away from our home. So most of my youth was spent in that forest picking berries and running into, jumping into the river and swimming and having fun until the Reds came in and we all began to go to some school.
You didn't go to school until the
communists came. Well, there was some kind of a school, but the discrimination against the Jews was so severe that the parents kept us out and we weren't too happy to go. So we used to get some private study, either in the Heder, the Hebrew school. My mother was a very intelligent woman. The community looked upon her as the village intellectual of sorts, because she was able to read the letters that came from America, and she was able to address envelopes for people who were writing to their spouses or relatives in the United States. And she was very well read in Jewish literature as it was at that time. I'm speaking of Jewish literature in 1920, as you gather, it's almost 60 years ago, which meant Shulam Aleichem and Yigal HaMoichos Forum, and I'm really pretending now because I'm not versed in Jewish literature, but I have memories of my mother telling us stories and people asking her questions about literature, and any stranger who would come to town would have to talk to my mother because she was so intelligent.
Did she just work inside her
home? She was just, yeah, but she was helping my father, and I keep emphasizing her intelligence because when we came to the United States, it came in good stead because we couldn't speak a word of English, we didn't know how to answer a phone after we installed the phone, but she found her way around to all of these things and managed, which shows that she had a lot of ingenuity as well as, you know, a certain native intelligence that saw her through difficult periods in life. However, my father, who was not the aggressor in the family, neither was he a subdued man, but he was a highly religious Orthodox Jew, was really something that you could say comes closest to sainthood. And they so declared him after he came to the United States. They have an eternal light burning for him in one of the synagogues in Chicago where we settled in Chicago. So that house in the back had the outhouse, and we stored wood, and we kept some of the merchandise stored there. And then after you left that, you came outdoors, we'd walk down steps, down the stairs, and then you were in some kind of a, you couldn't call it a yard, because everything is so uncultivated, undeveloped. The sanitary conditions were, of course, horrible. I mean, it's not describable. During the warm weather, we did well. We could go to the river and wash our clothes and bathe. But otherwise, we had to share the water for washing and ourselves and for cooking and so on.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
There were five of us. There were three girls and two boys. My older sister was a very beautiful woman.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped her very much, because during the worst days of the pogrom, she was able to smile to some of these invading soldiers and somehow talk them out of violent behavior towards the rest of us. She would play checkers with them. And then when things subsided, she and my brother, the oldest brother, we went to Odessa to study. That was a big accomplishment on the part of any Jewish family who could send their children away to a higher educational institution.
The gymnasium?
They
taught at the gymnasium?
Yeah, that was the gymnasium. They both studied in English, but you had to have some preparatory education. And they were self-educated. A lot of these people are self-educated. Like my brother, he became well-versed in something like 7 or 8 languages, and when he came to the United States, as a result of that, he was able to teach languages while he was studying medicine. He became a doctor some years later. So it's that kind of a family where my father, it's important to, again, harp on that a little, left for the United States before the First World War and couldn't get back because of the war. Or rather, he couldn't bring the family out to join him in the United States. So while he was here, stuck for a number of years, he became a cigar maker. Mm-hmm. And that was his profession, his trade, all his life. And there are some interesting stories, which I've written up in some of my books and short stories I've worked on. He built his own little factory on the back porch, and he and my mother and I would split the tobacco and roll the cigars, and he would try to sell them, and did sell it, and made his meager living because he refused to work on the Sabbath and the Jewish holidays, and consequently had difficulties getting certain jobs after he came. And that's about the long and short of it.
Did you have grandparents that you...
We had, of course we did, and I remember only my father's father, who was a Hebrew scholar, the Talmud, who lived with the old ancient books.
Was he a rabbi?
No, there were no rabbis in my family, if I remember. But he was forever poring over those books and studying with glasses that you could barely see. And that's all I have. Remembrance of him, but I have a remembrance of my mother's mother, who became very ill and came to stay with us, and she died in the same bed where I slept.
Mm.
And then I wake up in the morning with this dead woman by my side, and I ran out screaming, and my parents and the rest didn't know what I was screaming about, and I had disappeared, I think, for a day and a night. They were looking all over for me because the whole experience was so traumatic that I tried to stay away from it all. I don't remember much more about them.
Did you usually sleep with another brother or sister?
Oh, yes, of course. We had this bedroom without a window, and there were two beds, all built by my father. And the reason why I remember it is because somebody tried to break into our home one night, and the only way they could break in was to bore through the brick wall. And it got to a point where one of us kids who was sleeping in that bedroom heard it, and we were able to chase the intruders away. And then my father replastered and built that part of the wall, which was big enough for a man to crawl through. Now, what they would want is hard to know, because we really didn't have anything.
How would you, I found that real interesting. You had Christian friends, Gentile friends.
Very nice.
How did, were you really singular in having friendships like that, or did lots of people in the struggle have friendships with Gentiles?
I wouldn't be able to answer that question, because at that time I wasn't observant about these developments.
Mm-hmm.
There is a good possibility that other merchants who traded with Christians, and if they were nice people like my father, as I think many Jews are, they might have also developed friendships with Gentiles. But my father's relationship with the village, with the peasant shoemakers and bootmakers and other leather people, was of a special category because he was a special type of a man. He just happened to be the closest thing to what Christians think is is an image of Christ. And because of that, they had very great respect for all of us. They knew they weren't going to be cheated. They knew that they were getting a good price. They knew that the leather was no good. He wouldn't sell it. Generally, there was an honest relationship, a give and take relationship. So they would bring food when they didn't have money, and my parents would accept the food in exchange for some of this merchandise. But then he needed money in order to make a trip to the next city, which was maybe 30 miles away, to purchase that. But the memory of that entire period is a little shady, a little vague.
Do you remember what your diet consisted of most of the time, what you would eat?
I do remember a little of that because we spent a lot of time in the forest and by the river. And because of that, we would live off a lot of the things that we would ourselves pick, especially strawberries, a lot of that, and cherries and other berries. And somehow remember on the way to the river, we would stop off at a peasant who was looking and pick up a cucumber and something like that. And then my mother would give us in a little basket some hard-boiled eggs that was really something precious. And then somehow they made, we had the combination of butter and honey as a delicacy, as a treat. And it was as a spread, a special spread on the bread. And we take that along in a hard-boiled egg and what we pick in the rest in the forest and by the river. We were able to grow up quite healthy. I mean, all the ill health that I had acquired and the bad teeth and the poor eyesight and all that was in this country where I have spent my full life because of different environment conditions and food and all that. But the 10, 11 years of growing up in the Ukraine was really very salutary. I mean, it was very wonderful. I have nothing but these wonderful memories, including memories of pogroms where we had to run for our life.
Did you have any warning about those? How did you know that was about to happen?
Well, yes, you could hear the hoofs of the horses, you could hear the screaming of the pogrom makers, and sometimes a peasant would come running to this little community and say, the killers are coming, which wasn't too often, but a friend would do that, and others. I remember one peasant family was gracious enough to take in my oldest brother and my oldest sister into their home and keep it for almost 2 weeks during the very bad time when one day we woke up and we found 17 dead bodies lying in the middle of the street, the result of a pogrom by one of those bandits. Those were bandit groups, you know, peasants who were themselves disillusioned and were led by gangs, gang leaders, and they all had different names, but I don't remember any of them. And because of their own difficulties, they would blame the Jews in this little community as a means of getting their frustrations and everything off their own chest, and they would come in and commit great crimes and rob and take away our belongings, you know. It was not unusual to lose everything to them, but mainly human life. So I have memories of being in hiding, a memory of one pogrom where my father ran out in advance and we were running after him, and then we were hiding and so on.
Did boys and girls have separate games to play, or like girls, did girls have dolls? I mean, what did you do for play?
You're really taxing memory because we're talking of almost 60 years ago. I remember making dolls, but I remember also making shoes to wear out of cloth.
Really?
Yeah, house slippers like. And to this day, I use that pattern that I worked out when I was a kid and am able to put together. I stopped doing it in the last 20, 30 years. But I remember at different times when I was idling away a little time, I would take a piece of cloth and make my own house slippers, and they looked very nice. They were like dance shoes, you know. Then we made dolls. We did that. What the boys did, but there wasn't any baseball games or football games or anything like that. The boys, I remember, were in Haida. They were in the Hebrew schools, which were run usually by very bigoted, backward, ignorant men who would try to beat education and knowledge into the heads of these young kids who wanted to be free and roam the streets and go to the rivers, to the lake and go to the forest. So there were games we played, but I don't remember too much how together or how separate apart we were.
How old were you when you started going to the schools that the Reds initiated?
Well, the revolution was made in 1917. We had the terrible civil war and hunger and invading armies because we were a border city like. So I would say from about 1920, I was born in 19, when I was about 10, 11. Although I remember also participating in some May Day big parade. The reason why I remember is because I had a terrible toothache, and we had one dentist, a woman dentist. So I was on the outskirts of the city, and she was Jewish. And so I had to leave the big parade, May Day parade, and I went to her and she fixed the tooth or something.
Do you remember what she did?
No, but I was able to return and comfort. So she evidently had some kind of medical, not only knowledge, but also materials, you know.
Did you have doctors or,
yes.
A woman told me they were vouchers?
Well, the vouchers were the equivalent to our nurses, but we did have a fully graduated medical doctor. I come to think of it, I said we had several hundred families. Actually, with the environs where we lived, there was altogether, we were considered a Jewish community of some 2,000 people. We did have a doctor. And again, that doctor was much impressed with our family because of my mother's intellect and knowledge, and because of the reputation of my father as being this wonderful man, who every time there was a pogrom, somebody warned us, we were saved. A lot of families had lost people and things, but we were always protected in one form or another
mm-hmm.
by our Gentile friends, who were even apologetic when they returned, you know. I remember these things because we forever had, as a matter of fact, we were able to get out of that area into Poland, because some of these Gentile peasants, speaking of myself and my brother and my other sister, were the last three to leave. We were, I was, what, in 1922, I was going on 12,
mm-hmm.
something like that, and my sister was 15, and my brother in between was 14, 13. They gave us peasant wraps, peasant clothing. And they hid us in a wagon full of hay and covered us up so that when we crossed the border, the driver of this wagon, that tall, high with hay, would say he was just going to deliver this to the next community until we got over the border. Now, he risked his life. I don't remember his name or face or anything, but I remember that we were forever talking about the man who took us across the border.
What was your family's opinion of the Reds?
Well, it's a very interesting question because my older sister, the middle sister, somehow became a Red in this little community. And when the Reds marched in, she did something very heroic. She found a piece of red cloth underwear or something and hung it up as a red flag. But the real heroism came when the Red Army marched in and they needed shoes and boots and all that. She took the leader of the Red Army and took him to the back of our home where my father had his leather stashed away, sometimes hidden for fear of gangs coming in and robbing him. And she pointed to
that particular pile that contained some good leather that he had just brought in from someplace, and they took it with them to make boots or shoes. And
your father...
and my father did not beat her or scream or anything, but he was sympathetic, and so was to the whole family, because we knew that the only salvation for the Jewish people was the Red Army. I mean, there was... We could not trust the German army. We could not trust the Polish army. The gangs of the peasant pogrom gangs, you could not appeal to them to save your life. And the only ones who really had the humanitarian attitude were, we all looked forward. The Jews looked forward to the Reds marching in.
How did they show their sympathy with the Jewish people?
Well, I don't know. The community was too small to express it in a big way, and they always were just marching through. But when they were marching through, there was no robbing, there was no molesting, there was no rapes, there was no asking for the prettiest girls of the town to be lined up, as was the case with the others.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the Red Army marched in, my sister ran out in the middle of the street to welcome them. She was only 14 or 15, something like that. And the other Jews did. So I would say, essentially, the Jewish people would welcome for good reasons, for very good reasons. And much more than that, I cannot remember, because, again, my mind did not respond then politically or in any way sociologically. It was just a child's brain that responds to the comfort, your needs, you know.
How did your parents instill some kind of discipline with you and the rest of their children? I mean, did they have spankings, or was it just their word that you had to obey, or how did they discipline you?
Well, that's a very interesting question, too, because there was so much love in our family. There was so much mutual respect for each other. There's such very good relationship that the nicest things I can remember is our family life. And we did not need admonitions or spanking or such uses of discipline. However, there were times as kids would misbehave, and some of us did, as I misbehaved. My father caught me once playing cards. And that is obviously, in an Orthodox Jewish home, impermissible. And that was the one and only time I remember my father picking me up by my hair, and he said, "This will be the last time I'll ever catch you playing cards," and it was the last time.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't hurt me, but he broke up that little group of three girls, or four girls, playing cards. We didn't think it was a sin or anything, but we found out it was after that. That was the most severe punishment I can remember. I don't have any recollections of anything else except this dedication, this devotion, each one protecting the other, and us making sacrifices to make sure that my oldest brother and sister would have a chance to study, go to school, and so on.
There was really a sacrifice for your sister as well as your brother?
Well, I don't know what happened to them with regard to sacrifice, because for them it was quite a big thing to go to Odessa, but for us it was because we were deprived of the company and love of our older sister and brother, and the family's cut in half.
Mm-hmm.
When even though I was small, I remember the tragic moments of their departure, the sadness that they were leaving us, and they were gone for long periods, because we were quite a long ride from Odessa. So that would mean that they wouldn't go and come back for weekend visits. It was, you know, maybe 6, 8, 10 months before we could see them again for a short trip, a visit, you know. That's about the only kind of sacrifice I've been, you know. Generally speaking, I cannot dwell too much with accuracy on these matters that you're asking.
Well, you've been really informative. Do you recall how babies were delivered? Did you have midwives, or was that at a doctor or a hospital?
I cannot answer that. I do not recall, but I do recall that when my oldest two sisters got their menstrual periods, when they matured into young womanhood, it became a big secret in the family. And since there were no sanitary napkins or anything else, I remember that some old rags were torn up, and they protected themselves with that, and then
periodically they had to wash them, and that was done in secret, either in the bath when no one would see, or they would take it down to the river during the summer months. And I remember even in later years, when I began to show signs of maturing and began to need a brassiere, I had to put it on under the blanket. That was already in the United States,
mm-hmm.
because the question of sex was not discussed in any form among us. And the questions of having babies or the menstrual period or the development of your bust line and all this, you had to just find out for yourself from another girlfriend or something, as I had to.
Mm-hmm.
That's we did have a small hospital there, but I don't think anybody had deliveries made there. I think the Jewish people had their births at home.
Mm-hmm. Did any of your brothers and sisters or yourself have a job where you earned a wage while you were living in Ukraine?
Not in the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
No, but all of us began to earn money when we came to the United States.
So why don't you talk to me a little bit more about going to Germany? You started talking about the hayride.
The reunion with the family was in itself an extremely dramatic experience for us, because there we have there's one thing that my memory is failing me on. I don't remember whether it was my brother and sister who left first, or my father and mother that left us and went away. And what happened was that we were meeting piecemeal.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever came next, I think it was mother and father, because they probably would have been the most subject to terror if there was another pogrom or another army marching through. So they might have been the first ones to leave. And whereas the young people can run and hide and all that, you know, the parents. And then they could negotiate probably for tickets for the United States and lodgings. So there's a good possibility my parents left us first. It was all a matter of just maybe a half a year or 9 months. That's why it's all way before we united.
Mm-hmm.
So when we got to Poland, you're on the other side of the border and you don't know where to go and all that, but there's some Jewish organizations that were taking care of Jewish refugees on the other side from the Ukraine. And somehow we got connected with our brother and sister and my parents. And so in Poland, and then we got ourselves lodged in a small community, Polish community, where we had seen very anti-Semitic outbreaks that was just as bad as the ones we had in the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And they were quite horrifying experiences, because I still remember how we had to run home real quick and lock the doors and everything and hide yourself, because a group of boys were running after us because we were Jewish kids, you know, couldn't speak the language yet. And then when we found out, we had to wait for some time to get connected with the American relatives. We began to speak Polish. We began to learn to communicate with the people.
How long were you in Poland?
We must have been there about a year and a half, because mm-hmm. after that, we were about a half a year in Germany, and then we started learning that we got stuck there. We were hoping we could wait there long enough for our father to unite with us, so that we could all as a family get on the same boat. But it didn't work that way. He came much later, or maybe a year later, 6 months later, I don't recall.
Mm-hmm.
He came later.
How did you survive when you were as refugees?
Well, these Jewish organizations were doing it, as well as the assistance from our relatives from the United States. We had uncles and aunts who were, as they calling us or bringing us out to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It was because of that hope that they would assist us. My mother had two brothers and two sisters living in Chicago, so they got together and assisted. My father had also brothers and sisters living in Chicago. And so all in all, there was enough money coming through for our passport and transportation expense, and the rest between the organization that helped. And then you are deprived of things. You stay in the same dress for 6 months, and you wear the same shoes for 2 years, and you don't have underwear to change. You keep washing the underwear that you have. Those things I remember, that they're an extra comb or an extra any item became a luxury, you know. So you learn to live very economically, very frugally, until such time as the economic situation changed.
What was it like in Germany with the best? They had the programs and...
Germany was not that kind of a situation. There we were definitely in transit, sitting and waiting.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely a situation where no one would molest you. The only thing I remember of Germany is that was the first place where I learned to eat a banana. And I didn't know whether I should eat it with a peeling or without. And when I bought a banana, I had to ask how to eat it. Well, again, I was only about 12 years of age, and that was a good question. Mm-hmm. Never seen a banana, didn't know what it looked like, a taste of life. That's the only I do not have any recollections of the people of the city. I later revisited much of Europe and all of these places and have other recollections, but not when I was 11.
So this was 1922?
Well, it was 1922. We arrived in the United States. June of 1922. So we were living, let's say, in Germany maybe 22, and in Poland 21, and maybe 20.
Mm-hmm.
So it was possible.
So when you were in Germany, this was before Hitler.
Oh, but definitely. Yeah, it was after the war, after mm-hmm. the First World War, and we were just in transit. And of course, everything looked so beautiful and clean and big coming out of the small Jewish communities where we lived, cramped. And I remember all of us living with several other families in one flat in Poland. But then you see the air was clean, there was no pollution, the little food we had was of good quality, it wasn't messed up like today, you know, with removing all the important values of it. So the little we ate and what little we had was not detrimental. We were able to survive. Now, we spent 17 days on the ocean in some old boat. And that's where the real suffering came in, the seasickness, the cramped conditions, the unsanitary conditions for the
sun. Why don't you tell me a little bit more about that ship, how you were housed in it?
Well, that's about it. We were always running to the railings to throw out, and most of the people were just plain sick. We were riding, we were on the ship, I'm sure, in the third class, as most of these immigrants that came in had to be. It was very crowded. The main thing is the seasickness that I remember, because my older sister met a man, either in Poland or in Germany, who fell in love with her, and as I mentioned earlier, she was a strikingly beautiful young woman. And so that later, years later, an artist in the United States wanted to paint her. She was one of the models. So was my little sister, but my older sister was so was my mother, a very beautiful woman, but my older sister was exceptionally beautiful. And she was delicate. She had a very lovely skin, and her whole body and everything was chiseled to perfection, and she had an inner beauty that was shining through her skin and her eyes. And having been educated in Odessa and having lived under the Black Sea for a lot and all that, she was able to escape some of the ravages of the suffering we had where we lived when we were kids. A little bit they escaped. They had the education and the better life in Odessa. So. And because she had such a lovely hair and eyes and skin and all that, people were attracted to her because of her beauty and kindness and loving expression. She was really just that. You may sound, I'm in love with my family, which I am.
Mm-hmm.
I fell out of love with my little sister because we're on different political airwaves now, but that'll
mm-hmm.
come later. So this man, a very nice, clean-cut young man, fell in love with her. And he was going with us on the same boat.
Was he Jewish too?
He was Jewish. He was from Detroit. Because we later met him in Chicago. We brought another brother, and that brother fell in love with my other sister. But what was interesting is that the care he took of my sister on the boat was really remarkable. Because she was sick all the time, seasick. Besides bothering me, there was just excruciating discomforts from that kind of a 17-day trip. But he made her comfortable, and because of that, we all appreciated this man.
Did but you envy him, or
no.
For that?
No, because he was good to all of us, but his major attention was on my sister. And it was sort of understood that he is my sister's boyfriend. Don't forget, they were of marriageable age. If I was 11, my sister was 21, because she was 10 years older than I. See? And he must have been 25, and they were all handsome people, you know, intelligent. He came from a bigger city than our little shtetl. So, we appreciated all that. Mm-hmm. However, my sister wasn't in love with him. She was in love with someone she met in the gymnasium. And that was the kind of a love affair that the whole family was involved in that we would talk in whispers